Welcome to the Daniel Werman Show. It's yours truly coming to you live from the Dream Magic Studios here. It's 9 a.m. Eastern. This is your 6 a.m. West Coast wake-up call and all time zones in between and around the world. It's Tuesday, April 16th, and we are joined right here at the top of the show by Daniel Whelan. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So tell everybody a little bit about what you're currently doing right now in terms of coaching. Where are you on staff at as a coach?
I am the men's soccer coach at the University of Mobile, and I'm also a staff coach at Gulf Coast Range.
And how long have you been at the University of Mobile?
How long?
Yeah, for how long have you been on staff at the University of Mobile?
9 years. 9 years.
9 years. And how many as a head coach versus an assistant?
I was an assistant from 2010 till the end of the 2013 season. And then I've been the head coach from 2014 until now.
Okay. And And you've been with Gulf Coast Rangers or some version of Gulf Coast Rangers for how long?
9 years.
Okay, so about the same length of time there.
Yes.
And before you came into the Mobile area, where were you? What was a little bit of your background in terms of coaching or playing that kind of led you to end up in Mobile?
Well, I played collegiately at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach, Florida. And before that, I played youth football in England, where I'm from. And when that wasn't working out, I was lucky enough to be able to come to the States, and I've been here ever since.
So let's go there for a second in terms of your playing career coming up as a youth player. From England, what part of England and in what club or system were you connected to as a player coming up?
Well, I'm from Stockport, England, which is in Greater Manchester, and I went to Blackburn Rovers at the age of 11, and I was there from the age of 11 until I was almost 19. I was released just before my 19th birthday, I suppose like the March, April before my 19th birthday. And then luckily enough, a guy walked into we were all like kind of like hanging out one day, and a guy walked in who had been released 2 years previously, and he was at Embry-Riddle in Daytona Beach, and he just said, would it be something that I would be interested in? I said yes, and that was it, really. Got accepted into the university, and to Daytona Beach I went.
Now, obviously growing up in England and then playing with Blackburn Rovers, you're dreaming of playing in the Premier League, right? I mean, that's the dream that you're going for, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, that was the dream.
And so you get close, right? You get it's a lot closer than most soccer players will ever get the opportunity to experience.
Yes.
What?
Well, yeah, close, yeah.
So where, what was that feeling like when they came in to kind of sit you down and say, hey, look, there's just not a future with us going forward?
To be honest, for me, it wasn't a surprise because I wasn't in the top three or four players in my age group. I'd seen many players previously who I knew were better than me through, you know, at the same stage when they were under 19s, that hadn't gone on to get a professional contract. So it wasn't really a surprise. I kind of knew, you know, in all reality, if you're honest, you know, I think it wasn't really a surprise for me. Also, my dad would always say to me, you know, they're using you to give the best players or the players they think have got a chance of playing first team football a game. So you need to use them to get the best you can out of them. So that was kind of my outlook on it, but it wasn't really a surprise, to be honest.
Now, growing up there in England, do you have siblings?
One sister.
You have a sister. So basically you were the only one in the house that was kind of pursuing this path of trying to become a professional footballer.
Yes.
So you're going through, you kind of, you know, you're saying, okay, I could see the end of the road coming up. And so this is not shocking or earth shattering. I'm kind of coming to grips with reality. Before the college opportunity, what were you looking at? What were you thinking about in terms of what you were going to look at next? Was it coaching then? Was it trying to move to a different academy,
no,
different club? What were you thinking?
Yeah, so at the time, Blackburn Rovers was a Premier League club, and the academy was a good academy. So they have exit trials. I think they still have them, which is basically every player that gets released, the PFA put on trials and other clubs come. Also had the opportunity to go to a few clubs that, you know, at the time were lower down the pyramid and maybe go there for a week of training. But again, I'd seen so many guys. It's so hard because if you know, there's 20 Premier League clubs, but back then there was 92 professional clubs. There's more now if you include the professional teams that are full-time in the conference. But 92 clubs releasing, you know, 10 to 12 players every year. That's a lot of players trying to get back in the game. So when the opportunity to come to Embry Riddle, get a degree, I really didn't pursue anything else just because, again, I'd seen so many people try and do that. And the way it would work would be, you know, you'd go on a Monday, you may train. Tuesday'd be a light session. Wednesday would be a game. Thursday, they tell you yes or no. So really, you've got one game to impress. And, you know, playing with a bunch of guys you don't really know and everything else. I just didn't think, you know, it just wasn't something that I really pursued.
So were you, at the time, were you thinking coaching? Or was that not even in the periphery of your mind at the moment? You were just thinking, hey, let me come to America, get a degree, play some soccer, and I'll figure it out after that.
No, I wasn't thinking coaching at all. I was really thinking, you know, go get an education, go out 4 years and just see what happens after the 4 years. The coaching part didn't really play into my mind till later on in my college career.
Were you doing any coaching while you were in school? I know a lot of players nowadays are, you know, will get involved in starting kind of getting their licenses and start coaching in clubs or in, you know, rec programs around the country, et cetera. Were you starting to kind of do that while you were in college, or did you not even think about that until, you know, towards the end?
No, I did do that. I did, actually at Blackburn, they made us do that. So we had to do our FA level one and level two, because they were very aware of, you know, most of us weren't going to be professional soccer players. So they did, a really good job of trying to make sure we had, you know, we had to go to sixth form or college there. So we did our FA level one and level two. And then when I got to Embry-Riddle, I started doing individual sessions, probably my second year there. But I didn't actually start doing any kind of club coaching until I came to Alabama.
So you're coaching at the University of Mobile, and yeah. You are University of Mobile is in NAIA school.
Yes.
And you're also coaching with a local club, and they are a generational club, which is a thing that I'm very passionate about, a club that has a first team and then a youth team structure beneath it. And for a lot of reasons, and I talk about this a lot on the show, for a lot of reasons, I feel like that is the way to go. It's the healthiest version of a club, that you have a first team and you have youth teams attached to it, and there is a inside the club, a player, you know, pathway to a first team. And recently there was news that you have been named the head coach of the men's first team with Gulf Coast Rangers that play in the Gulf Coast Premier League. So what are you looking at going into this Gulf Coast Premier League season as the new coach of the men's Rangers team?
Well, first of all, I think, like you said, the fact that you've got a first team now is huge for the club. I guess when you ask what I'm looking at, you mean like what are our goals throughout the season, or what do you mean?
Yeah, just, you know, what are you looking at in terms of, you know, the players that you have access to that are going to play in the team, and then, you know, what are the goals as a team within the league?
Well, the players that, you know, the goal of the club with regards to the playing with the players, or the you don't want to call them a playing staff because obviously they're not getting paid, but with regards to the players, is our ultimate goal is to one day be able to field a competitive team made up of players who have played for Gulf Coast Rangers through the youth system. So that's the goal, right? Like Athletic Bilbao do in Spain, where, you know, they only have players from the Basque region. So try and give our 10, 11, 12, 13-year-olds a team to support, a team they can come and watch, and they can see some of the younger players out there, and they can go, you know, I want to be that guy. I want to play for this team. That's the long-term goal. The goal this season within that is to have eight current Gulf Coast Rangers, or eight homegrown players, I guess we would call them, eight players who have played for us or currently with us or are about to finish with us, eight of them in every match day squad. We're allowed 22 players in the roster. So we want to have eight initially starting this year in every match day squad. And we think that's doable. Obviously, the younger players may have family vacations, and, you know, they may have different things going on. They may be going to some camps, they may be going to some recruiting visits at different colleges. So it may not always be the same age, but I think we can do that. We then are adding to the playing to the playing roster with coaches to kind of try and give it that, you know, community feel that, again, if you're a 9, 10, 12-year-old and you get a chance to go watch your coach, typically our coaches and young players have really good relationships. So I think it's exciting, or we think it's exciting for the player to be able to go watch his coach play and hopefully play how he's trying to get the young players to play, although they'll probably make the exact same mistakes players make. And then do have a few spaces on the roster for you know, players who we think can be impact players who can help us stay somewhere near the top of the table if that's possible.
So one of the things I want to jump on for just a second and kind of talk through, because I think it's so important, building off of this idea of a generational club and the aspirations of Gulf Coast Rangers integrating in their academy players youth players into their first team, kind of following this example of Athletic Bilbao in Spain. When one of the issues that I see constantly when I am, you know, traveling around the U.S., having conversations with people involved in the game, is this lack of really understanding a true footballing culture. You lived it, growing up in England and having the opportunity to play in the Blackburn Rovers Academy. And I think it's one of the big things that's missing for a lot of young players in America is they truly don't understand culture and what a real true football, authentic football culture really is. So this idea that you have some of these coaches within the staff that are on the roster and playing, you have some homegrown players that you identify as you know, good enough to be on the roster, get playing time, etc., that you've been developing within the youth team, academy team setup. And then obviously you know you're bringing in, you know, some other difference makers, playmaker type players to kind of round out this roster. I think you guys are figuring out a pretty good formula for also at the same time of putting a competitive team on the field, also creating a really good foundation for these younger players to understand a football culture. Was that intentional, or do you think that's just going to kind of be a happy byproduct of this setup that you are working on?
Well, I think, you know, Gerardo's the director of coaching, I think his vision was for it to have a cultural effect, to build, you know, a soccer, not just a soccer player, but a soccer person. And then, you know, so the cultural part I do think is intentional from Gerardo. We've kind of got there in a really, you know, I wouldn't say by accident, but we got there in a way. So we kept losing, or we keep losing players at the youth level that travel 4 hours, 3 hours, or they'll club hop because, you know, a U15 team 45 minutes away is better, or 2 hours away. So we kind of sat down and said, what can we do to combat this? And one of the things we came up with was, you know, giving the young players that deserve it a chance to play in the GCPL, because that's a better standard than what they could play at, you know, because it's men's football. You'll be playing against a 28, 29, 30-year-old player. So rather than playing in your own age group, if you're that good at 16, 17, 18, then you can play men's football, which is what happens everywhere else in the world. So kind of did it to combat losing so many, not so many, but losing players that are traveling 4 hours, 3 hours, whatever it may be, to say, look, we have this option for the better players, or for the players that are good enough to do it. Why do you need to go, you know, wherever it may be, to play when you can stay here and play on the GCPL team?
And those players that were playing and then kind of looking to find greener grass somewhere else, were they going for programming that was their own age, like a U15 team somewhere else, or were they looking at? Okay.
Yes, they'd go for programming in their own age, and sometimes they would go because their idea was, or I don't even know if it's the kid or the parents, but sometimes they go because, you know, in the parents' mind, the kids' mind, the other club does a better job promoting its players to colleges. So, you know, that's part of the reason why they would say they were leaving. But if we feel like the highest level in Alabama is ECNL, I would think that most GCPL teams, or I would be very confident that most GCPL teams would be a U18 ECNL team. So, you know, we're hoping that it also serves a player retention within the club.
So, as you are working towards this first season in charge, this is the second year, the second season for Rangers in the Gulf Coast Premier League. In terms of on the field, last year the team made the playoffs. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so obviously that I'm assuming that would be the goal again this year, is to do that. But in addition to, you know, your on the field goals and building towards the playoffs of the Gulf Coast Premier League, what are you hoping for in particular, that group of players that are in the academy? You know, they may be U18, U17 players in the academy, that, you know, 8, 9, 10 or whatever that kind of float through the roster over the summer. What is your hope as their coach for this summer? What are you hoping for them to get out of this experience?
Well, one, I hope they get a real view of soccer and a different, because we will have international players on the team. We'll have players from different parts of the U.S. So one, we hope to get a real experience to, you know, what soccer means to some people, or the different levels available to players. And when I say levels, I mean, I shouldn't call them levels, you know, in the eye soccer, junior pop soccer. There's really good players at all those levels. And I think sometimes we think, especially down here, because we are in Lower Alabama, we think, you know, we see Alabama football and we think, okay, we're going to go play. I want to go play at North Carolina. And if I don't play at North Carolina, I'm not playing because everything else is terrible. And that's not the reality. There's a lot of very good college soccer programs all over the country. So hopefully it opens their eyes to that a little bit, because I do think as a coach, sometimes, you know, a player will come to me and say, hey, coach, I want to play college soccer. I'm like, okay, where do you want to go? And they'll say Wake Forest. And you're thinking, that's just not going to happen. Can play college soccer, but it doesn't, you know, there's other programs out there other than Wake Forest or whatever it may be. The second thing, or part of it, not necessarily in that order, but we want them to improve as soccer players. We want them to be challenged, to feel like, you know, what the club is doing for them is helping them in their pathway, whether that's moving on to college, whether they don't go play college but they want to come back and play GCPL following summer. So just continue their love of the game. And thirdly, we hope that they you know, they're proud to play for the club and represent the club well.
So this will be, you know, as I mentioned, the first season that you're leading this team as their coach. And I think there's some excitement and energy building towards the season, a change in venue for the club, playing a little bit closer to the home training base compared to last year, I think will be a benefit for the club as well. Looking at the Rangers project as a whole in kind of what you've observed over the last 9 years, What are you looking at in terms of what you hope to see over these next, say, 2, 3, or 4 years for the club as it continues to build and continues to grow?
Well, we'll say from where we were when I started, the level of our players now is much better. And I think that comes also because soccer has become much more popular in this country. You can find it, you know, most Saturday mornings. It's on regular television as well as, you know, your NBC sports networks. So I think the goal of the club, I wouldn't necessarily say it's about continuing to build a soccer community that have more and more people play the game. And then as that happens, if the talent pool continues to get better and better, then having appropriate levels for those teams. But I think all in all, just growing, continue to grow the game, try and be an impact in the community through the game, And hopefully the summer team will do that if we can get some decent attendances as well. Hopefully can create a little bit more exposure for the game and put more people out there who may not watch soccer as much.
Well, thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for spending some time with us. And look forward to seeing what progress is made this summer with the team and under your leadership. And again, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Ryan.
That was Daniel Whelan, the head coach of the University of Mobile and one of the staff coaches at Gulf Coast Rangers Football Club, and they are located in South Alabama, right in the Mobile area. And the beautiful thing about this particular club and other clubs like it around the country is that they are a generational club, and it's really, really beneficial in so many ways, as we've talked about on the show. And I hope more clubs choose to follow in that pathway and in those footsteps, because it can really do a lot of good things for your club and your organization and your community. So the sponsor for today's show is Charity Water. Charity Water provides clean drinking water to people all over the world who need it and need it desperately. And you can find more information about Charity Water at charitywater.org. We'll be back in just.
पहिला म पनि बच्चा अवस्थामा रहँदाखेरि मैले यो कल्पना गरेको थिएन कि तर अहिलेको बच्चाहरूलाई मैले सोध्दाखेरि अथवा उनीहरूलाई क्लासमा गएर तिमी के भन्ने भनेर भन्दाखेरि उनीहरू बच्चाहरूले एक क्लास दुई क्लास तिन क्लासका बच्चाहरूले उनीहरूले सहजै रूपमा चाहिँ उपयुक्त गर्न सक्छ।
म टिचर बन्छु,
सोसल वर्क इन्जिनियर।
Welcome back to the show. I'd like to thank Daniel Whelan for coming on and spending some time with us. If you had any trouble hearing some of the audio, we apologize. There's a little bit of a cell phone issue there. But overall, I really loved his feedback and insight on, you know, growing up in England, the transition to America in college, and then finding a pathway for himself as a coach and molder of talent and developing players, and then kind of seeing you know, the efforts that he's undertaken in terms of, you know, leading a university as well as being a staff coach and the first team coach with the Gulf Coast Rangers Football Club. The pathway that he was describing as a player for himself is one that is not necessarily the norm here in America. It is not accessible the opportunity to go play in academies that provide a pathway to a first team, especially teams that are professional. He mentioned there was, when he was coming up, there was 92 professional clubs in England. Now there's more, but even then, when there was 92 clubs, there's only a finite number, and for a country the size of England, you know, the access was a little bit easier, even though the competition level was high, which helps raise quality, right? So demand puts pressures on the market responds accordingly. And in America, things are kind of all over the place. So if you are a player and you want to make it as a professional footballer, the odds are that you're going to have to do some extraordinary things to make it. And some of those extraordinary things may be moving. It may be moving to another state, another city. It may be moving to a different club. It may be relocating out of the country for schooling or an opportunity overseas. But it is a shame that our country hasn't figured out how to do soccer properly, and not being able to do it properly has detrimental effects on player opportunities. These opportunities or lack thereof means that players have to take on these extraordinary measures to make it as a professional and make it at the highest level that they possibly can. Seeing some of the stories and reading some of the stories of players who have made it overseas and who have done everything in their power to get out of their present circumstances and forge a path to reach their dreams. Every one of those stories is inspiring, but it's also an indictment on our system. It's why I say often that players make it despite our system, not because of it. There are things that we could do that would really help the pathway. The U.S. Soccer Federation needs to do a better job of providing a system that is connected. We talk about it all the time on the show, and this idea of promotion and relegation and open access and merit-based competition and opportunities. When you have that kind of system in place, it allows quality to rise to the top. Merit matters, and it becomes the most important function and piece and focus of a club, of a player, of a coach. And when we look at what we can do in our local markets, while there are many issues at the federation level, and despite proclamations from the federation that we're making progress in this area and this area and this area and this area, and they'll give off a list of a litany of things that they think, you know, are relevant to us in terms of being involved in soccer in America. There are a lot of things that aren't going right, but there are a lot of things that we can do about it. We can do things about certain situations, especially when we're talking about local. And one of the things I am deeply passionate about is the structure of clubs, meaning that a lot of clubs, because of the segregation and segmentation of U.S. soccer, are not clubs that I would classify as generational clubs. These clubs, to be a generational club means that you have a first team that is, you know, an adult team, and that team is playing in some type of league. It could be playing in a city league. It could be playing in a state league. It could be playing in a amateur regional league, a semi-pro league, a professional league. It what league your first team plays in isn't as relevant as the fact that you have one. And then in addition to that, by having a first team, you also have your academy or youth teams beneath that team. And what it does is, it in the same way that we need a pathway for clubs to make it to the top, you need a pathway for clubs to be able to facilitate development of players. And the best pathway for player development is being in a club that has a first team, and basically the club kind of becomes a pyramid itself, where you have this big base of players that play in a, you know, a more recreational type of level. Maybe they're not quite as serious. Maybe they're not that good, but they like the game and they like to play the game. And then you find some players out of that group that are good, and they enjoy it and they want to play and they want to spend more time. And so you work with them more. And then eventually, out of all of that, you start to find one player here, one player there, one player over here that have the ability, they have the talent to work their way up to the top. And by working their way up to the top, they make it to the first team. And what that first team does is it becomes not just an opportunity to play more games or continue to play as you get older, but it also becomes a goal. It becomes a light at the end of the tunnel within the club, in the same way that promotion is the light at the end of the tunnel for a club that is trying to work its way from the grassroots as high as it possibly can. When a club is a generational club, the players within the club are kind of following the same pathway that the club itself is following on a club level. The players are trying to follow that same pathway on the club level from a player development side. And what you have is a situation where players are now able to easily understand what is my end goal? What does success look like? And ultimately, by providing environments where these players can continue to develop and be inspired by players that are older than them and have been playing at a higher level than them, what happens is you start to establish a footballing culture, a soccer culture within your club, a generational hierarchy, but it's also a generational passing on of the culture of the club. So the way the club plays on the field, the way the club handles things in the locker room, the way the club handles how it travels, how it presents itself in public, how it handles adversity in a match, all of those things start to get handed off, passed on from older player to younger player, almost by, you know, osmosis. It's a transference. It's not necessarily going to happen in a classroom style setting. It's going to happen in a way that is a casual, you know, kind of coming together of relationship, and that relationship then leads to that younger player coming to a place of understanding what it means to be, in this case of the Gulf Coast Rangers, a Rangers men's player, and the pride that comes with wearing that jersey. And when you score a goal, that you're grabbing that badge and you are celebrating with your community, with your city, even with your region, as your club continues to grow and fans start to drive and want to get access to your organization and your club because you're becoming more and more successful. This kind of culture is something that Europe and South America, Central America, and even in parts of Asia have come to understand and experience for so long. And that experience has given these clubs environments and cultures and opportunities for their players. Even when they are brought in from the outside, they feel it. They sense it. They they begin to understand what it means to be a Barcelona player or a Real Madrid player or a Real Betis player or a Blackburn Rovers player or a Liverpool Football Club player. You start to feel it, and you start to understand what it means to wear that shirt and to tap that badge, because it goes beyond a contract, or it goes beyond the opportunity to just play the game. You feel like you are an ambassador of that club to that fan base, to those supporters, to that community, to that city. And the way that that culture is built and developed is over time, and it's through these generational relationships. And ultimately, I think that's why it's so important, so very important, that American soccer clubs begin to really look in the mirror and examine what you're doing and figure out some things that you can do better. And one of those is that if you are a club right now and you are not a generational club, maybe you are just a first team amateur club, maybe you are a youth club and you don't have a first team, my hope is that you would really listen and learn and research and seek out understanding and information from clubs around the world and see if there's a way forward for your club to begin to rethink the way it operates, to rethink what's possible, to rethink about the future and the present, and build off of your past so that your players have something at the end of the tunnel, a light at the end of the tunnel, something they can aspire to, something that inspires them and ultimately connects with your community. Look, when you are building a first team, and regardless of whether or not you have a generational club, maybe you are just a first team club, or maybe you are a club that is generational. In either case, if you are trying to connect with your community, you've got to dig deep roots. You've got to spend the time, the energy, the resources to connect with the leaders in your community and with the families in your community, especially those who hold soccer near and dear to their heart. They're avid fans, and they are avid supporters of football around the world. And in digging those roots, in digging deep roots, in trying to find a way to really not just be in the community, but be part of the community, be with the community. Think about what you can do for them. Not just what you want from them, but what you can do for them. And the reason why I'm a big fan of generational clubs is that it gets a lot easier when a young 8-year-old boy or a 9-year-old girl or you know, a 12-year-old preteen is looking up to their first team and they are inspired by what they see. It's a lot easier for your first team in your club to be able to make that connection to those families, to make those connections to those businesses and sponsors and commercial deals, because now all of a sudden it's not just about 8, 10, 15, 20, 30 people. Now all of a sudden you're a club and you've got dozens upon dozens of people, maybe hundreds, maybe thousands of people in your club. That all of a sudden changes the trajectory of what is possible for your club. And not only does it become possible for your club, but you're also at the same time changing the future and the opportunities for the players in your club. These players now have an idol. They have something that they can strive for, a goal that becomes achievable and something they can work towards. Right now, most players who play in youth teams that have no first team are just going through programming as if they are just going to school. And they may have fond memories when they leave the program and leave the club, and they, in the same way that they may have fond memories when they leave high school. But when they leave, they're done. And they might come back for an alma mater game. They may come back for homecoming. They may come back to a high school for you know, some event or a reunion. But it's no longer a part of who they are. It's no longer a part of their everyday life. It's no more a part, a big part of what they do with their time, with their talents, with their gifts, their treasure, their resources, their finances. And by shifting into a generational club, what you're doing is you are providing a platform for your players to become lifetime members of your club. They become loyal to your club. And it may not be in your first generation, but as you continue to grow, you can eventually reach these levels that you see around the world. You start to see generational transference of support towards clubs, and those numbers begin to mushroom. They begin to just grow exponentially. It's something that U.S. soccer and those involved at the highest levels of the federation have completely missed when it comes to American soccer. They have completely missed this concept and understanding of what a club really is and what it means in a community when it's done the right way. And missing that has had impacts all across the country, all across America. We have missed the opportunity. And we've seen, even now with Major League Soccer starting in the mid-90s, even now coming into 2019, 25 years and more of Major League Soccer and their franchises and their failure to connect with local communities and build generational transference. Some of these franchises have been trying to figure out how to work backwards and fix it and do things to get in the community. Some have been more successful than others, but it is important to realize that our first division in America, Major League Soccer, was not born out of a true footballing mentality. It was born out of an opportunity or a mindset to take an opportunity to try to Americanize soccer, and they've been trying to tweak things as they go and improve things as they grow, but ultimately they've always missed that secret sauce, which is having a club be an independent club and part, an integral part of its community. When a club is that vital to its community, if it shut down, the whole community would know. And sadly, in many places throughout the country, if soccer clubs closed down, the effects on the community may not even be noticed for quite some time, because ultimately, in the end, that club did not build deep roots right where they are. The impact usually comes on families because of programming. So that if a club closes down and it was a youth club and now those opportunities are no longer there, it's a programming loss in their schedule and a programming loss for their kids to play. It's not necessarily a loss in terms of their emotion and their emotional connection to that club. So this is an area where I think we've got to do a better job in our clubs, right where we are. Maybe you are a parent and your kids play in a club and you're trying to figure out, well, I would like to see that with my kids in my kids' club. Get involved. Volunteer. Maybe you're not a coach, but you can help in some way. Maybe you've got a business background, a legal background. Maybe you're in construction and you can help with some projects at the park or things for the club, whatever the case may be, but get involved. Make it your club too. By doing those kind of things, getting involved in the local, in the grassroots of American soccer, that place where the game really starts for most players, you can start to make a big impact on that community and in the environments that your kids are playing in. Maybe you are a coach. Maybe you're a coach in a club and you want to see your club aspire to greatness, aspire to be excellent in what you do. And you want to see your club take some next steps. I would encourage you to start having those conversations with your fellow coaches and your board members and start to dream out loud with each other and encourage one another in terms of what you can do to build your club for the future, to build your club into what you think it could be, and in taking those next steps, not only for the present, but what you want to build for the future. And if you're a player and you watch the Premier League and you watch La Liga and Serie A and the Bundesliga, the Eredivisie and so many other great leagues around the world, maybe you watch Major League Soccer, the USL, or other leagues that are right there in your backyard, the best thing that you can do is love the game and play the game. Enjoy the game. Become the best player that you can be. Try your best and put the time in. It's going to be hard. It's going to be frustrating at times. If you're really, really working at it really, really hard, it may even lead you to tears because of frustration. But I promise you, the better you get and the more opportunities that you take, the more proud you're going to be of yourself, the more you're going to have a feeling of accomplishment, a pride in yourself, and you're going to become confident in who you are, in what you can offer to a team, what you can become as a player, and regardless of whether or not you make it as a professional, that work ethic and that love for the game can translate into so many different things, even if it's not directly connected to soccer down the road. It could have incredible impacts and life lessons that you can learn as a player playing and giving your best for your club. And your best may not be good enough to make it to the first team. And in the same way that Daniel Whelan was talking earlier on the show about how he wanted to play in the Premier League and he wanted to play for the Blackburn Rovers and he had tried really hard, but he realized that dream was just not going to happen. And so he took another opportunity. And now, even though at the time he wasn't even thinking about being a coach, now he has the opportunity to make an impact on future generations of players and the current generation of players in the club as well as at the University of Mobile. So it's really neat to see and experience and learn from people around the game, people like Daniel who have gone through the player pathway and realized that the end was here and that he needed to make a shift. And then now all of a sudden he comes to America, he gets a new experience, and he takes it. And now he's able to live this out as his profession and still be involved in the game and be a coach and make an impact on people. I think too often when we're looking at soccer in America, we miss what it really means to love the game and be passionate about the game. We get caught up in just kind of, you know, checking boxes and you know, making sure, okay, we got our kids to practice, or, you know, we did this, or we went to a game, we went to a tournament. You know, it just kind of becomes monotonous. It becomes boring or it just becomes busy. And we don't stop to just think about the moment we're in, the opportunities that we have, the excitement and the passion and love that we really do have for this game. And although America has many warts when it comes to our structure and our systems, what America does have that I believe it has in a greater supply than any other country in the world is it has potential. And if we will work together, if we will work where we are individually and connect with one another and work together across the country, I think we can make massive strides as a soccer country. And hopefully one day we will first aspire to this, but also take the actions to achieve becoming the greatest soccer country on earth. That's my hope. That's what I work on every single day. That's what I want to see from American soccer. It's what I want to see from U.S. soccer. And it's why I'm always looking at things and examining things and talking to people and trying to bring people on the show that have these experiences and have this insight and background so that we can all learn and understand where we are, what our place is in the world, and what our place is right where we are, and how we can help build and grow the game. Because it is a beautiful game when it's played at the highest level. To me, there is no greater game in the world. It is captivating. It is amazing. It is exhilarating. And it is for me, the best sport in the world. And I love it. And I hope to see that our country continues to take strides in building up what we're doing and taking it to a level that is able to match what our potential really is, because we do have incredible potential. We have cities in this country that don't have professional sports and certainly don't have professional football teams or professional soccer teams that dwarf cities in Europe that do have professional teams. Villarreal is a club in Spain that's in a city of less than 100,000 people. Eibar, a club in Spain that has made news in recent years in their promotion into La Liga, the first division in Spain, is from a city of less than 50,000 people. So this idea that in America we can't have professional clubs all over this country that are doing amazing work in cities of 100, 250, 500,000 people, to me is crazy. And we should be trying to do everything we can to create a system and structure and resources that helps get us to that place. So I'd like to thank Daniel Whelan for coming on the show, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in and for listening and watching the show. The feedback has been incredible. You can learn more about the show at danielworkman.com. Thanks again for joining us. We will see you tomorrow. Filled with all the strength I find, there's nothing I can't do.